Today's January 24. I'm sorry, January 28, 2003.
Yeah, there we are.
So we're not going back. Let's see if we can, then let's move to public hearing on House Bill 2145. And John Limbeck. John, we've had a couple of discussions since our last meeting about the measure, and wondering if you might just kind of give the committee a brief overview of, you know, what, how things look from your perspective and where we're going to be going.
Yes. First of all, happy election day, everybody. It is an election day. The chairman and I have had some discussions regarding the issue of legislative oversight and limitations. What you have before you today, as I understand it, are some proposed amendments, I mean Section 7 and 8. That Section 7 would is a section that would establish the language for a limitation on the federal money for this biennium. Section 8 is a section that would establish a limitation on the federal money for next biennium. We support these sections and understand that we will be working with Ways and Means on the actual dollar figures to fit in to those blanks that are on the piece of paper when we have better information to provide people.
Okay. And let's see, we also, I think, had a question at the last hearing about the complaint procedure and, I guess, where citizens are able to go after the, you know, if they're not satisfied with the informal process that has been identified in section. Let me check it here. The section 8,
section
sub
8.
1.
If it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd like Lynn Rossick, who's been working on that issue most closely, for us to address that for you.
Okay.
Chair Doyle, members of the committee, I'm Lynn Rossick from the Attorney General's office. Our attempt here is to develop a process that would informally and inexpensively resolve issues that relate to compliance with Title III of the Federal Act. Nonetheless, we'd acknowledge that if someone remained dissatisfied at the end, there already is a statute in Chapter 246 or as 246.910 that allows anyone dissatisfied with an act or failure to act by the Secretary of State to bring a lawsuit in Marion County Circuit Court. So there, this is an exclusive or end process. We're, of course, extremely hopeful that if informal means do not resolve matters, that the complaint procedure that the Secretary will establish will resolve 99.9% of them, but they're not left with no recourse whatsoever.
Okay. Anything further from your end, Ms. Limbeck? Any questions of the Secretary of State's office? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Could I add one more thing? I should have done this at the beginning. I'm sorry. I wanted to introduce to the committee Brenda Bays from our office, just sitting there in the green jacket. Many of you may remember Scott Tai, who left, was a manager of operations in our office and left last summer for a different job. And Brenda has taken his spot, and I just wanted to introduce you to Brenda because she will be showing up at various hearings and be in attendance on behalf of the division.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Let's see. Call Ross Day to the podium, please.
Good
please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for your record, my name is Ross A., Director of Legal Affairs, Oregonians in Action. We are the largest property rights group of its kind in the country. Not only are we active, as many of you know, in the land use arena, we also are active in the initiative and referendum process as well. My comments today, I assume that the only drafted amendments are the Dash 2 amendments. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Well, Dash 1s and Dash 2s.
Yeah, I haven't seen Dash 1s. But
Dash 1s were from last week.
I apologize. So if my comments are a little dated, I apologize for that. But as the bill is originally written, raised significant concerns for our organization because it basically gave, in our view, the Secretary of State carte blanche to spend the money as he sees fit. I have for the record, and I'd ask that it be included in the record for this measure as well, the statements of Congressman Ney, who is the chairman of the House Committee that was responsible for the Help America Vote Act of 2002, which he clearly explains what the purposes of the Help America Vote Act are. It's pretty clear. The Help America Vote Act is designed to help with voting systems and voting. Our concern is that this money will be funneled off for purposes which it was not intended, for instance, initiative signature verification and other matters which make it more difficult for people to exercise their rights guaranteed under Article 4, Section 1 of the Oregon Constitution. So for that reason, Oregonians in Action, as HB 2145 was originally written, has significant concerns in that regard. Like I said, I haven't seen the Dash 1s or Dash 2s, but to the extent they limit the manner in which the funds for the election fund can be spent, we'd certainly support those changes.
Okay. Any questions? Mr. Day, do you have suggestions on how to put proper controls on those kind of expenditures? And I would suggest, at least on the Dash 2 amendments, what is being suggested by legislative council is limitation of expenditures provision, similar to any other ways and means appropriation. But at this point it doesn't specify exactly where the money is going to go, which is, I think my understanding at least, is that it's supposed to then be part of the ways and means process, that they'll be dictating, you
know, how it's spent.
Right.
As far as, of course, I guess I should admit that I am a practicing attorney. So, and before I came on to OIA, I was fairly involved in election law issues. And there's a principle called the Supremacy Clause, which obviously Constitutional Law 101 says that federal law supersedes any state law or state constitutional provision. To that extent, I would certainly concede that the federal law, would dictate initially how the money in this fund can or can't be spent. However, the way the law itself is written, and of course, as we see, the commission that supports the Election Assistance Commission that's going to be set up at the federal level interprets and administers the law, I think it might be open to some interpretation, at least initially. The comments, and I think the record for HAVA, notwithstanding, I think that there is some wiggle room for the Secretary of State or whoever to use funds for purposes which they're not intended. The intent behind HAVA, in my mind, as I read the record, is pretty clear. It is intended to remedy what happened in Florida in the 2000 elections. And it is intended to assist counties and states to a certain extent as well, update their voter registration systems and their voting systems as well. It's not intended for purposes such as signature verification, for initiative petition regulation, or anything, any of that sort, any of those sort of purposes. And I think it would be wise for the committee to at least consider in this initial draft to make that perfectly clear. Either, you know, we can either, I'd be happy to work with the committee on language that would make that clear, either in terms of the actual text of language or a preamble, which might make the legislative record clear.
Chairman, good afternoon, Ross. And you indicated that you had Congressman Ney's comments for to be included in the record. Do we have copies of that available?
I do not have copies with me. I'm sorry. I did not realize that we were up today. I thought we were up on Thursday, so my mistake. But I can get
I'd
copies.
Be interested in seeing them.
I can get copies to everyone.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Day, I received reports from my county, one of my counties, that there is now an administrative rule about that the Secretary of State has enacted whereby people must be admitted to the county elections offices to observe the verification of signatures. Are you aware of that, and do you have a comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, if I understand correctly, the administrative rule says that you have to basically register before you can go in and be an election observer, if I understand the administrative rule correctly. Of course, that raises certain concerns to me that I have to go and get permission from the county or the state before I'm allowed to go and observe what is probably our most sacred process in our government. So that certainly does raise concerns. Just as the fact that in an instance up in Multnomah County where they close the vote counting process for overnight and they start up again, that's, you know, without any observations. Or in a case which I litigated here in Marion County where the Secretary of State's office testified under oath in circuit court that a particular measure had enough signatures to make the ballot on a Friday afternoon, and Monday afternoon my client got a call and said, oh, guess what, you don't, magically, over a weekend. So there are certainly concerns regarding both the observation of the signature verification in addition to the vote count observation as well.
Thank you.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Day, I thank you for being here today. I think that all of us like to know that our money is going to be spent for what it was intended, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think, though, however, that it's not a complicated thing. I mean, as a legislative body, we can say exactly the way the money should be spent, and there should be some accountability for that. And anything beyond that, that Secretary of State or whomever has to go to the legislature in order to spend money in any other way. So I don't think it's a real complicated process. I agree with you for the end result, but I don't see it that it's anything that we can't easily accomplish.
Mr. Chair, if I may make one more comment. If I understood Ms. Rosnick correctly, and I just want to make sure that I did, and maybe she wants to come up again. My reading of of HAVA is that states are to set up a administrative complaint procedure, which will allow citizens who are concerned with the implementation of HAVA at the state level to file complaints with the Secretary of State. If I understood Ms. Rosnick's testimony correctly, she said that 246.910, which is the state statute which allows challenges in circuit court, that it is not precluded by HAVA. And that was my understanding of the law as well, that you can still file your 910 suit in circuit court if the facts deem it.
Thank you. Anything further for Mr. Day? Great, thank you for your help. Ed Reitlinger, Legislative Council. One minute. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
For assistance of the committee, if you can explain a bit the Dash 2 amendment showing the expenditure limitation, how we're able, and maybe give a little explanation of how we're able to do this in the process of getting this.
Sure. For the record, Ted Reutlinger from the Legislative Council's office. I'm the one who drafts all of the election bills, so I'll probably be here a few times during the session. What the Dash 2 amendments do is simply put expenditure limits into 2145, and there's two sections, Section 7 and Section 8. The first one, 7, limits expenditures during this biennium, from now up until June 30th of 2003. If, in the case that the Secretary of State were to receive federal funds under HAVA prior to June 30th of this year, Section 8 would limit the expenditures for the next biennium, the 03-05 biennium. This language is standard language that you see in a host of appropriation bills. It's used frequently in cases where an agency receives federal funds and the legislature wants to limit the amount of that money that the agency can spend. In this case, what the bill does is continuously appropriate all of those federal funds to the Secretary of State so that when the money comes in, the Secretary of State can just continue to spend it and the legislature doesn't have to keep appropriating that money each time. By putting these expenditure limits in, you, the legislature, gain control about how much of that federal money the Secretary of State can spend in each biennium. When you do that, you turn it into an appropriation bill under the Constitution, which under Article 9, Section 7, there's a nice little section that says that bills that appropriate money for current expenses of the state can't contain provisions on any other matter. And that's designed to prevent the classic log rolling situation, which you frequently see at the federal level, where all sorts of stuff gets loaded into an appropriation bill, so you have to buy up on that in order to get the money. The courts have said that we can put material into an appropriation bill that's directly related to the purpose for which the money is being appropriated. And I think this bill fits within those guidelines without difficulty because all of this money is directly related to the state's compliance requirements under the federal Help America Vote Act. So it's coming into this fund that we've set up here. It's supposed to be spent only for purposes for which it can be spent under the federal law. That's what this bill is about. So I don't see any constitutional difficulty with that piece. Obviously, these amendments contain blank spaces, which will have to be filled in at some point in the process, which I presume will happen either here or in Ways and Means. But at some point, a dollar amount will have to be in there. And what will happen for the next biennium is the legislature could put a figure of a dollar, say, in Section 8, which would require the Secretary of State next biennium to come into the E-Board to get that number raised to whatever the appropriate level is in order to spend that money.
Any questions? Yeah. Representative Bonhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There appears to be limiting language in lines 7 and 8 and 9 and also in lines 12, 13, 14, and 15. Would this limiting language allow these funds to be spent on anything other than the activities under the Federal Help America Vote Act, assuming that the Dash 2s are adopted?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, the goal is for the answer to that question to be no. If you look at the original bill, it also states on page 1, lines 18 and 19, that what the money in this fund can be spent on is only the purposes which are laid out in the federal law for which the state can spend this federal HAVA money. So if, for example, an agency were to receive federal money that was limited like this and they went off and spent it on something else, they would be in technical violation of the law. So you have that limitation both in the bill and in the expenditure limit provisions. So the goal is for the Secretary of State to have the authority to only spend the money for purposes that are described in the federal law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Mr. Reitlinger, just to kind of follow up on that a little bit, if there are subsequent bills, which we expect to appear before this committee and before the chambers that deal with the Help America Vote Act, is there any concerns that this kind of limitation now will then come back as we deal with these other, trying to implement other pieces of the federal act that's going to come back and I guess hurt us on how we're to implement those provisions, or will that does this kind of catch it all just by the language that's in the amendment, the dash two amendment?
Mr. Chair, if I understand your question, I think it would probably catch all of those things. In other words, if this bill were to pass in its current form and authorize the Secretary of State to spend the federal money on any have a purpose, then if a subsequent bill came along a couple of months later, which contained some provisions that brought the state law into compliance with HAVA, then I think the Secretary of State could spend the money in this fund for that purpose, as long as it's one of those purposes that the federal law says we can spend the money on. But if something else comes along that's unrelated to this federal stuff, then I think there would be a serious question about whether they could use this fund to spend money on that other purpose. It has to be a federal law authorized purpose.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Mons-Anderson.
Thank you. I haven't read the HAVA yet. Are there pieces of the Vote Act that could be interpreted and give the Secretary of State more leeway than? I mean, I think I heard something that there was an education component to it. And how would that be interpreted? Could that be then, I'm just trying to think of the Secretary of State could use that money for education purposes. I don't really want to get into micromanaging, but I think what Oregonians in Action were alluding to was then maybe under a section from HAVA that we would be using the funds that would maybe circumvent some of the activities that they, want to do. Do you have a comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mons-Anderson, the federal law does refer to voter education, if I remember correctly, but I think it's somewhat specific about what that education is supposed to encompass. And it's fairly specific about various notices that state elections offices can disseminate information to people about how to vote, how to get a replacement ballot, what to do if you make a mistake, things like that. It's relatively specific, but it does use the phrase voter education, which obviously can be interpreted by people in different ways. And at some point, it's theoretically possible that one person's interpretation of voter education gets too close to a partisan line, for example. But it seems to me that what's written in the bill now is specific enough that the world of voter education is going to be directed towards how to vote, how to resolve conflicts about your registration, what to do if you show up and the county clerk says that you're not registered. How do you go about doing that? So I think it's specific enough that people can disagree.
Yes, Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ted, I'm reading from something we got off the internet that's kind of old. It's Douglas W. Jones, who wrote some comments on this act in 2001. And he says that he's worried about the issue of handicapped access, and if the legislation is enacted as worded, this was before it was passed, it could be a very expensive legislative mandate. Can you address that concern?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, the bill does contain requirements about voter accessibility for people with disabilities. And it's interesting in its application to Oregon because we don't have the classic polling place elections as most states do. So, and what it, if I remember correctly, it requires that states make available technology that will allow people with disabilities to vote. And I believe what that translates to is electronic voting machines that people with various disabilities can use. And having read some of what the proposed state plan might look like, it looks like what that will mean is that there will be at least one machine available in each county at the county clerk's office for people to go and use to vote, and then another that may be available sort of on an itinerant basis to travel around to people where they are, people who may not be able to travel because of their disability. So yes, the federal law does require that people with all levels of disabilities be given the opportunity to vote. As I understand it, part of the federal money that flows to the states is earmarked to be spent for that purpose.
Thank you.
Anything further? Okay, thank you. Ms. Lindbeck, anything further? Hearing?
No, Mr. Chairman, I think Ted covered the bases well. So, unless anybody has any further questions of me.
Okay. Representative Bethlehem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, in light of this further discussion or more extended discussion, if Mr. Day has any, if his fears or concerns have been relieved or removed.
Well, bring him up and then ask him. Thank you.
Could you come up, Mr. Day?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Backlund, Ross Day of the Oregonians in Action. I'm not sure if I understood Mr. Rettlinger's testimony correctly or not. I think what he said was you can limit, place limits on the appropriation. I think what he, in representative to Vice Chair Monis Anderson's question, he said that he felt that it was fairly specific. I tend to disagree. I don't think it's I don't think the statute itself is as specific as Mr. Rettlinger would interpret it as. It simply says voter education, and for some of us, the phrase voter education, especially in the last round, was not a pleasant phrase to hear, because it meant that your initiative petition was going to be attacked. And so, at least in my view, I don't know that my fears have been allayed, at least from what I've heard. I did want to comment on one other point that I forgot to make, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, and that's on the unfunded mandates question. I know that was an issue for the committee in the past. The Unfunded Mandates Act of 1995 stated that, of course, that the Congress can't pass an act and a mandate, an action by the state, without providing money for it as well, an appropriation for it as well. There is an exemption, of course, as there usually is, and it applies in this particular case to rights guaranteed by the Constitution. So, in this instance, the Unfunded Mandates Act of 1995 would likely not apply on that specific side, because I know that's a big issue for a lot of states, especially a lot of the less sparsely populated states. So, but in response to Representative Backlund's question, I'm not sure that my fears have necessarily been allayed. That's, you know, it's a matter of interpretation, I guess.
Sure, yeah. Representative Monis Anderson.
Thank you. Are you aware that if we don't establish at least the fund so that we can receive the fund, that within, I think, what did they say, 60 days? Or that then Oregon would be out of millions of dollars. And so, correct me if I'm wrong. So that's why this piece of legislation would be nice to get through, and then that there will be others. I tend to be trusting. I'm learning, being in this process, that you need to be very pragmatic also. But I would hope that this, I'm not an attorney, that the intent of the law is for this money to be strictly used to enact the to enact HAVA, and I would hope that Ways and Means with this would have enough oversight with the amendments that they would not be used in a manner that wasn't the intent of this piece of legislation.
Chair Doyle, Vice Chair Martha Anderson, I am aware that this fund does need to be established in order to receive the federal funds. I'm also aware that the testimony last week by the Secretary of State's office was that the mere fact that you all are hearing this bill as early as you are places you ahead of the curve in terms of the relationship to the other states. So my sense is that if you go in and you were to amend it further and come back on Tuesday or Thursday or whenever, that you'll still be ahead of the curve. That being said, I wish I shared your optimism, having represented clients on the other side of the V against, as we say, against the Secretary of State. I can tell you that I know that the folks at the Secretary of State's office do the best job they can, and I know their hearts are in the right place. But I also know that I've represented a number of clients who have been wronged, and that's where my distrust. I've only been practicing for 3 years. And I've already engendered a helpful distrust of the process.
Yes, Representative Close.
Mr. Chair, in the handout that you gave us from the Congressional Research Service, it says that each state has to submit a plan, and part of it is how the programs for voter education will help in meeting the requirements of Title III. I'm wondering, it's not clear to me if our state has the state plan drawn up yet, and if that's something we could actually look at.
Okay. Mr. Limbeck.
May I be excused?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, yes, we are in the process of putting together the state plan. We have a steering committee working on it. Representative Doyle has been asked to serve on that committee and has agreed to do so. We are hopeful that we could have a draft of the plan available to share with the legislature and the public as early as mid-March. And to address Mr. Day's concerns, I believe, Representative Close, you asked me at the last hearing if I thought it was appropriate that money under the HAVA Act be spent on items related to the initiative and referendum process. Okay. And my answer at that point was no. My answer is still no.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just say that it would be good if we could see the draft, to allay the fears of the community on that education piece.
Okay. I guess maybe Mr. Limbeck, you can give us a little further information. The effect of this bill versus other bills that are going to be coming through, that and whether it comes out of your office or not, my understanding of this bill is to establish the fund and establish the complaint procedure.
Right. And that's a requirement before we can receive any of the money that they may be ready to send to us as early as the next 60 days. And that doesn't mean we can spend it, but it would allow us to receive it, put it in our elections fund, and let it help draw some interest.
So issues such as the whole definition of what voter education may mean.
Right.
as a legislature, we have opportunities to come in to define that if we choose to.
Yes.
Just, you know, as you go through your rulemaking process, that would be going yes. through as well. But I guess I'm looking at it more from the legislative perspective that, you know, we can come in with whatever definitions, you know, we can get out of the building
right.
know, to help with that. And I'm trying to see if there's an actual connection between that kind of detail on a substantive policy versus, you know, this bill that establishes the fund and it establishes the complaint procedure, which is one of the requirements of receiving the money for right. put in the fund.
Right. You guys are going to be here for a while, and we're going to be working on this for a while. And I think the message is very clear here that the committee is very interested in the voter education piece of this, and we are developing that as part of the steering committee. And I will be happy to report to you as often as you want in regards to how that is being defined and what the intent and the plans are for the spending of any federal funds on any kind of voter education. And I think that would provide you plenty of opportunity this session to, if you feel the need, to get in there and write legislation that would define that for us. You know, if you'd like to do that, you'll have plenty of opportunity to do that, because it is moving along fairly quickly, and I think we could come to you fairly quickly with that.
And I guess just for committee members, from my perspective as well, I'm seeing that there are other issues. Good example today, there were some county clerks that had interest in this just to start getting into the, you know, the whole have a process and what are we going to do in election reform. And obviously this is not a day that they can be coming to the Capitol when they're dealing with an election today. I don't feel like we would be detracting from their input on this particular bill, because it's, from what I've heard, these clerks, their interest is more total election reform issues. It's not, you know, whether the fund should be established or whether the complaint procedure is proper. So, you know, unless I'm kind of reading wrong, I just assume go into work session on it so we get this part finished, and then we can move on to some of the other detail issues as we proceed with the rest of the Voters Act. Okay, great. Thank you. Well, let's close the public hearing then and enter work session on House Bill 2145. Representative Flores.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I would move to adopt Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2145.
Okay. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. We don't have a Dash 1 that I can see.
So we have it last week.
Why was it last week?
Okay. In your first file.
Yeah.
And, Mr. Chair, if I might, had to go here. I spoke with our legislative counsel, and he advises me that adopting these two together, he will combine them so that the section numbers are accurately reflected. Some of them are duplicative between the two, but his understanding is that they don't conflict with each other. So adopting both of them, we'll get one amendment combined after the fact.
Okay. And just as before we vote, too, just to, so you have all the information, this bill was first presented to us as a bill that then would be referred to Ways and Means. And after discussions with our Senate Rules co-chairs, they had indicated a desire to have a substantive review of this bill as well. So we were trying to figure out, you know, the best way to make sure we got through the process, knowing we still had an appropriations provision here. And in basically discussions with our Ways and Means co-chairs and with one of the Rules co-chairs that we were able to talk to today, Senator Brown, we see that the best way to do this is to have this still come out as a referral to Ways and Means. Ways and Means then will pass it to the Senate Rules Committee for substantive review. Then they will return it back to Ways and Means for the appropriation and the expenditure limitation. And then it comes to the floors. So, you know, the floor won't see this until after it's through the Ways and Means process. Yeah. Okay. So, motion, any other discussion? Okay. Any objection? Okay. The dash one and dash twos are adopted. And Representative Flores.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we approve a due pass as amended, be printed, engrossed, and be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference on House Bill 2145.
Okay. And any discussion? Okay. Call the roll, please.
Representative Torres.
Aye.
Representative Miller-Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Backlund.
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Chair Doyle.
Aye. It is ordered. We are through for now with House Bill 2145. And now open up a public hearing on House Bill 2044. And Kathy Polino, if I can get you to come up and give us a few comments on 2044. Before we get your testimony, just as background for the committee, the interim joint legislative audit committee, which I was a co-chair, had was reviewing the whole issue of whether the legislative audit committee, as a joint committee, should be one that we see through the regular session as well as the interim. And there has been a provision in statute already that the presiding officers can establish a joint legislative committee if they choose to during the session. And over the last, I think, three bienniums now that it's been available, it just has not been enacted. In part because of budget concerns. The other is that there has been, it's kind of a pretty heavy burden to put on the Ways and Means people and the legislative fiscal staff to have this additional committee added on. However, the discussion in the committee was very clear that they wanted to go forward with a change in the statute that would mandate in future sessions this audit function, primarily because the Ways and Means process is now doing it. They get bogged down more in trying to do two things at the same time. Even though they are interested in how money has been spent in the past, their main focus is more on how to appropriate for the future. And so the audit function has kind of taken a back seat. And, you know, there was a pretty good consensus among the joint committee during the interim that we needed to do some fixes to see if we can move this more as a substantive committee during session. And so that's the product that you have before you. Since then, we've had some discussions with the director of the audit division for the Secretary of State's office for some input, and, you know, I wanted to present that today to see then, you know, what kind of reaction we have here to move this bill forward. Okay. So with that, Ms. Polino.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Kathy Polino, Director of the Secretary of State Audits Division. We don't take a position on this particular bill. What I was hoping to do is just to maybe point out a couple of places that we might want to clarify some language that's proposed, and maybe also take an opportunity to do a little bit of cleanup so that the bill reflects actually how the audit committee is working today.
And I guess before you move into the specifics of the bill, maybe you can give a brief background to the members here on, you know, what your function is, how you do relate to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and you know, just kind of show where the place is for you and for us on the audit function. and then how this then kind of dovetails into that.
Sure. Our office, as the Secretary of State, is the constitutional auditor of public accounts, and we all kind of play a role in fiscal accountability for state government. You being members of the Legislative Assembly, obviously you set where the money should be spent. The governor's office has a constitutional role then to carry out that function. And then us as the Secretary of State's office, we audit on behalf of the taxpayers to ensure that the funds are spent as intended. And so we play that feedback role to policymakers on fiscal accountability, how the funds are spent, working with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, we report back to that committee on the findings from our office. If any additional legislation needs to take place, we'll make some recommendations on what can happen. But as the Secretary of State's office, we don't have the power to make agencies follow our recommendations. So we make recommendations and hope to convince people through the evidence that we gather that there's a need for action. And so, you know, we do work closely with the audit committee. We discuss audit plans. However, there's a little bit of a separation that needs to be there with regards to how we choose what we audit as a constitutional auditor, and then also what the priorities of the committee are as far as what you would like to see audited. Many times we can take those requests and meet those things. We have limited resources too, and so we try to make that balance on prioritizing where we spend our audit resources. One of the important things we see about what the role of the committee can be is serving as kind of that avenue to take legislative requests for audits and do some prioritization as to what are the legislative priorities for audits, so that when audit resources are needed to go look at a program, it's taken into account where the audit should go. We are seeing some bills coming through this session that are asking for audits of different kinds of programs, and obviously we have limited resources. You all are dealing with limited resources, and so we want to make the best choices. With regards to this particular bill, there is a couple statements in here that, you know, I just asked the committee to take a look at the language and see if there's a need for some clarification. What the bill talks about, and I'm specifically looking at Section 2. Section 1 is on the amendments looking at the makeup of the committee, and I'd like to focus more on Section 2, the new Statement 4, which is talking about reviewing and making recommendations on allocations of state resources to audit activities. One thing is, to me, is that it's unclear to me what that's talking about, whether we are talking about making recommendations to Ways and Means, making recommendations to my office, making recommendations to internal audit activities. I'm not sure what the intent of that is, especially because later on in the bill, it does already talk about the committee assigning tasks to various folks. And so just what I wanted to ask is whether the statement itself is necessary, and if so, whether that language can be clarified to say whether who the recommendations are being made to, and then what the allocation of resources means, whether that's general recommendations on dollars and FTE or actual exactly what activities are going to be audited. So with that, and then there's a couple little cleanup issues that we talked about earlier, but
Well, if you can explain to the what you know, why the section, the current legislation allows the work with the Budget Management Division, the executive branch, why would that be in here?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I believe that piece was added to the statute in 1989, and back then the Budget and Management Division used to do management type audits. They no longer serve that function. They review budgets now, and they don't do analysis like our office does and like Legislative Fiscal does. And so one of the things we talked about is they don't play an active role in the audit committee, and to look at whether budget management should still be included in this part of the legislation or not. They don't serve that role anymore. So.
All right. Any questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Sanderson.
Thank you. Do they meet very often during the interim? I mean,
Mr. Chair, Representative Monis Anderson, about quarterly is when the audit committee meets.
Okay.
And do you feel that, since I'm not sure how involved, five, before there was four, and now it's recommended there's five, I mean, does it make any difference?
Mr. Chair, Representative Monis Anderson, as far as the makeup of the committee, I'm okay with how it's been working, and I believe the amendments were made by the members of the committee had some concerns, and Representative Doyle was one of those co-chairs, so.
Yeah, and just to that, I think all what you would see in that Section 1, Sub 1 is all that was done there is it continues as five members, because it was five before. It's just that the co-chairs are no longer required to be on the committee. They can still be on it. It's just a way to relieve them of that extra work during session if, you know, if that was required. So. Okay. Any other questions about just the audit function and the comments that Ms. Polino made about, you know, her cleanup suggestions? Yes.
I just have one quick question, Mr. Chair. In line 10, the wording is must have served on a joint committee on Ways and Means, and I was just wondering why you wouldn't want somebody who was currently serving, other than this might be in the interim. Is that the case?
As I recall, the basis for that was to make sure that there was prior experience on Ways and Means, so that when we, if the committee is doing an audit function, that they actually have somebody that has some historical perspective on Ways and Means. That since you're looking backwards at what how money was spent, how did the Ways and Means decide, you know, determine it to, as a priority? Yeah, so it's that kind of provision. So.
Thank you.
Just to finish up on that, so that it isn't contemplated that any of the members would necessarily be on the Ways and Means Committee at the time, although they might be.
They could very well be.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It it all depends on, you know, how the presiding officers choose to make up their Ways and Means Committees, but. And what this does is at least give them latitude that if they want Ways and Means people on it or not, they get that ability to do that. Okay. Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to thank her for her presentation. I believe at a time when people are very cynical about government that you opened your presentation with you represent the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I think that we should write articles about the audit. You do a wonderful job in the accountability and in checking. You come to it in a neutral position. And this is only my second session, but in the first session, I was very impressed with the fact that out of some of those recommendations that they were audited, you had some very, very deep, thoughtful recommendations on how things should be handled better. And so for that, I want to thank you very much.
Okay. If no other comments, then we will go ahead on Thursday to see about a work session on this bill. We'll bring in the amendments to cover the concerns that were expressed and just see where it takes us from there. Okay. Okay. There were no others that had signed up to testify on House Bill 2044, so we will close the public hearing. And if there's nothing further, we shall adjourn for the day.
Expeditiously.